this is Olivia, and you're listening to Bikini Drive-In. Today, I'm joined again by Sarah Atnikov. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk about this movie today.
Me too.
Bikini Drive-In's mission is to analyze horror and science fiction films through an intersectional feminist lens while combining elements of screen and media studies, arts criticism, and women gender studies. Since we'll be discussing portrayals of horror and violence, content warning and listener discretion is advised, etc. Also, spoilers ahead. Today we are discussing Bong Joon-ho's 2006 film, The Host.
Mr. Kim.
Formaldehyde. Dirty formaldehyde. Pour him into the sink.
Daughter's still alive. Why didn't you contact the police or the military, a human rights organization, something?
Referencing an actual 2000 incident in which a U.S. military mortician ordered a soldier to dump formaldehyde into the Han River, The Host depicts a mutant creature emerging from the river and wreaking havoc on Seoul's populace. When the creature abducts a young girl, her family decides that they are the only ones who can save her. Also, fun fact, co-writer and director Bong Joon-ho and the designer of the creature nicknamed it Steve Buscemi based on the actor's screen persona and the way he acted in Fargo from 1996, which I just love because...
I love that so much.
Steve Buscemi is my crush.
I also love that.
Yeah. Fun fact about me. Sarah, what's your history with The Host and why did you choose this movie?
I remember hearing about it around the time it came out, and it was being lauded as this like near perfect monster slash horror film. Mm-hmm. So I watched it and I really, really loved it. It's obvious in its overall, like, the government is bad message in a way that really works for me. Mm-hmm. But I also thought it was funny and sad, and it seemed like it was sort of a lot of genres of movies inside this one movie. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember why I chose it. I think we were kind of just, like, talking about potential subjects, and maybe you mentioned it, and I got really excited, as I sometimes do,
yeah.
about watching it again and getting to talk about it.
Yeah, cool. I don't really remember the origin story of talking about The Host, but you seemed excited about it.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's enough.
Yeah. Are you a fan of monster movies generally?
I am. I like them. Like, I like how they have sort of a campy history, like Frankenstein and Creature from the Black Lagoon. I like them for how they tend to have jump scares, mm-hmm. or be really ominous. Like, suspense for me is not enjoyable, but like a little jump scare here and there is.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And I like how sometimes you're made to wonder about this monster, like you never really see it, but then sometimes, like is in the case with this one, they show it right away, so it mm-hmm. becomes more of an actual character.
Yes.
And something that I noticed, like as I've gotten older, I appreciate them for their ability to look at what exactly makes a monster, and how to look at like monster creature movies. And how they show like otherness and how society others things that it doesn't understand. Like here, there's a very obvious monster, like an actual mutant monster creature thing. But there are so many other monsters that made this monster. And then it makes me think about, like, is something that's just doing what it needs to do to live a monster? And I always think about Frankenstein, like the movies, but mostly the book, because the book is just amazing. But, like, how he's the monster in the movie, but that's where the movies have all failed. Because Frankenstein's monster isn't a monster. Like, he's just a guy who got cobbled together from dead people because of the ego of a doctor who, like, if we're looking at the big picture, like, for me, I think that's the real monster.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I feel I haven't really seen a lot of monster movies other than, like, Jurassic Park or Starship Troopers, which I don't know if they count. But yeah, yeah. Something of like Alien and The Thing, but they almost seem like too nihilistic to be considered monster movies. What do you think?
I think that there's like Starship Troopers and Jurassic Park are like one side of the spectrum, and like Alien is another one. And I would put The Thing kind of somewhere like maybe in the middle. But I think that they totally can be monster movies. I think they're all like very different movies, but at their heart are these creatures that aren't human, that represent things that we don't understand or that we fear, or things that have the capacity to take us out as the top species in the world, like velociraptors. And The Thing too, sure, why not? And also at their heart is the fact that they were either like created, revived, or like potentially exploited, like in Alien and Aliens. Like we look at them as ways to destroy other things. Or to be potentially exploited for human gain.
So yeah, I just want to talk about monster movies, the history of monster movies kind of in general. So a monster movie or creature feature is a film that focuses on a group of characters struggling to survive attacks by one or more antagonistic monsters, often abnormally large ones. The film may also fall under the horror, comedy, fantasy, or science fiction genres. The monster is usually a villain, but can be a metaphor for humankind's continuous destruction. Typically, movie monsters are different from more traditional antagonists in that they may exist due to circumstances beyond their control. Their actions are not entirely based on choice, potentially making them objects of sympathy to film viewers, which I think maybe that's why I don't necessarily connect with monster movies, is because I always just end up feeling bad. Like, say, the Jurassic Park. Oh, you like, yeah, it's a sympathy.
I don't like feeling bad. I mean, like, in general, but like, I like rooting for the underdog or like sympathizing with a potentially what could be seen as unlikable character. Because I like a movie that kind of like makes you think about things, because like in so many of these monster movies, like it says, you know, like the monster is usually a villain, but it can be a metaphor of humankind's continuous destruction. Like in all of these movies, it's either they're like aliens or something happened to something to make it the way that it is. And like, or it's like a, like it came from nature, but like is a one-off. And like, we don't understand it. And I feel like it's this way to like look at humanity and how we deal with things that we don't understand in a way that's kind of accessible. It's like the, more so than like a documentary would be, or, you know, like a feature length drama film. Like, I think that people go into seeing like horror films or monster films wanting to be scared. But I think that there is the real potential to be like, to think about things, which I which I love. Like, I love that about horror and about monster creature films.
Yeah, and just to touch on your comment you made about, is this something, is the creature in the host, is it just doing what it needs to survive? And this sort of idea of like, what is the point here? Yeah, like, is it actively sort of terrorizing this city, or is it just eating and collecting people because that's its like survival instincts? But then like, then there's the scene where it kills the grandfather and then doesn't even eat him. Like, that was just like revenge.
Yeah.
That's like, that was such an interesting like character development for that creature.
Well, and that's the thing that I thought was really interesting and part of the reason why I really like this movie and thought, like, and think that it is as successful as it is because it, like, this is a weird fish creature.
Yes.
But, like, the director gave it, like, agency and a personality in a way because, like, that scene where the grandpa gets killed is just straight up, like, he just gets clobbered and killed because the monster is, like, tired of his family trying to kill it.
Yeah.
It is, like, a very, like, and just the way that it happens, like, it's coming from the background, and you see it sort of come into focus, and it just sort of, like, picks him up with its tail and, like, smashes it. Like, it's very dramatic and very purposeful.
Yes.
And it's, like, the only time in the movie that, like, it has... Because it's always kind of just, like, either scooping people up or, like, barfing people up or trying to get the little girl. Like, it's never, like, that much of a in the forefront of the movie, but like with that, it's like that scene, and it's like, and it's silent, and it's just like that scene is pretty devastating.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
And it is very much like the monster was just like, okay, this is happening. You guys are messing with me. So it does show that like this thing does have a memory and a personality and like a desire to live.
이번에 다리 10개거든요. 예? 아저씨. 이번에 다리 10개거든요. 한번 세보세요.
아마존에서 춤 맞아. 얼굴이 맞아. 내가 혹시 왔어. 어?
가자.
또 나올지 모르잖아요.
Saw the creature as like this symptom of these corrupt forces. So we have the military base that is like intentionally poisoning the water supply of this city, and then the military comes in, and it's just like you said earlier, like there are like several other monsters within this movie rather than the creature.
And like the scene where they're doing all of those horrible medical things, like they're basically trying to lobotomize the little girl's dad. And then like the surgeon, he just straight up to the other guy was like, I'm going to tell you something. Like, we're saying it's this virus, but like we haven't found any virus. So it's like it's very like, you know, the government is creating this mass hysteria for something that like they're saying it's a virus. And they're lying basically about it. And like, it's just, that part was really good.
It was got really dark, and that lobotomy scene was like very troubling.
And just how, like, he's just kind of like, okay, like, please stop. Like, it's just very much like just a regular. Like, you know, they talk about how he, like, falls asleep all the time and isn't that smart because he didn't get enough protein, which is kind of funny in its own way. But, like, he's sort of made out to be this, like, kind of adult of a dad. And he's just trying to do the right thing and, like, find his little girl. And this, like, government is going after him and lying. And, like, I think it's because he is such a, like, doofusy character that it makes that part. Those parts and just his general treatment since after like he gets picked up all the worse.
Yeah, especially in like the scene where the doctor in that scene where they're he's talking over him and he just like pleads with him. It's like, please just listen to me. It's kind of this like idea of like sort of medical world and academia, like not actually listening to people's experiences.
Yeah.
But trying to like pathologize it. Pardon me?
Yeah. Even the government.
Yeah, like, definitely.
Not listening to people.
Yeah, of course.
Sounds
yeah.
familiar.
And yeah, like I know. This movie is a documentary.
It is. When you texted me that, I was like, it is a documentary. Yeah. And it's from like 2006, I think.
Yeah.
It's this thing of like, okay, cool. Still relevant.
Great.
And that's not like that long ago. But like,
yeah.
I like when I rewatched it last week, I was like, oh, this is like with the protests and everything, and then the government being like, there's a virus. It's just really weird.
Yeah, it's very strange. Very it's a weird time to watch this movie for sure.
It is, yeah.
So I have a quote from IndieWire.com from an article called Bong Joon-ho's The Host is the defining monster movie of the 21st century. So it's a story about an evil that doesn't even pretend to be anything else, about state forces who immediately pounce on the opportunity to punish their country's most vulnerable citizens, and about creepy scientists they fly in openly to brag about how they're going to lobotomize Song's character just to shut him up. It's a story about how people are only as strong as the protection they offer the weakest among them, which could obviously is very relevant now.
Yes, it is.
Yes,
and it also, I feel like, is a story about like the change that can happen by like uprisings and like the end part where they're all sort of like. There's a whole bunch of folks that are protesting
the Agent Yellow.
Yeah,
sort of like gassing this whole neighborhood.
Totally. And the fact that they're like actively, and it's all like young people taking to the streets, and they recognize the like younger brother as being sort of like a hero because he had protested.
Yeah, he was part of these demonstrations.
Before, he's a very well versed protester. I feel, yeah, like it hits on like so many notes. And so many things that like were relevant then, were relevant before them, and are very relevant now.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's definitely like a very like anti-war, anti-military film, and like kind of an environmental film, I think, at the same time.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He made this film like as a like about South Korea's involvement, like U.S. involvement in South Korea's military, and a statement on that. And I think that like the overall statement of like military involvement with governments and how that affects people and stuff is something that's like very continues to be, and I mean hopefully won't be forever, but like continues to be super relevant.
Yeah, totally. I have a quote here from environmentalandsociety.org. While Hollywood movies have long been fascinated with U.S. wars, as well as the technology, iconography, and spectacles of war-making, filmmakers from more marginal locations have attempted to dramatize the environmental risks of U.S. militarization. If environmental harm tends to take effect gradually and in hardly visible forms, fiction films can condense dispersed experiences of risk and environmental anxiety into dramatic plots. Popular movies that object to U.S. militarization, such as Ishiro Honda's Godzilla from 1954, and Bong Joon-ho's The Host from 2006, resort to supernatural and fantastic elements in efforts to express spectacular and monstrous risks perceived by local communities. By imagining monsters that originate from U.S. military activity, these movies turn the genre of the monster movie against U.S. war-making. Which I thought was such an interesting point, like especially if you compare this movie to, say, like, I mean, I'm not a big fan of, like, war movies anyway, like, especially, like, American war movies, because it does seem like propaganda and very, like, USA.
Yeah.
And just sort of this, like, myth-making that occurs.
Yeah. When it comes to, like, I mean, like, I think that there should be less U.S. movies and more movies from elsewhere that y'all have access to.
Yeah.
But, like, when it comes to talking about like war or environmental stuff, I think that it's very interesting and like also kind of important to watch movies from elsewhere because like they have like they're living the ramifications of US involvement.
Yes. Yeah.
And even and Canadian involvement. Like let's not think that we're so good.
Yeah.
But like they're living this is their reality, you know, like if we see, you know, like movies from Vietnam, it's like, this is like, we're like, it's things like this that are important for us to see. And like, that can say it in a much better and I think like more honest way than like US films ever could.
Or from like the US point of view.
Exactly.
Rather,
yeah.
Just another point of view, please.
Exactly. Oh my God, yes, for everything. But like, yeah, like you said how like US movies tend to be so, you know, it's almost propaganda mm-hmm. and like rah, rah, we're so great when you have like this person telling through a creature film.
Yes.
Like things that actually happened to him and in his country and mm-hmm. stuff. It's just like, yeah, like this is the way to do it, you know, mm-hmm. like make this sort of subversive, for those that don't know, film about occupation and military involvement and all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
but like make it look like it's a monster film.
Yeah. Just to go to sort of build on the idea of like myth making, how they portrayed like public mourning and grief in the movie. So in the film, sort of right after the monster attack, the Korean government managed to get a memorial together very quickly, but couldn't set up any sort of beds or like any sort of support for people who are mourning people who are killed or give any sort of information. So it's just like these like very empty statements and sort of like, yeah, just like very much like thoughts and prayers. And just this, like, spectacle of grief rather than actually, like, supporting the people affected and people in your community. And it's just...
Like, if this movie came out today, there would be a hashtag of something.
Yes.
Like, hashtag on monster or something like that. Like, and I, you know, it's... I think it did a really good job of that, like, mm-hmm. showing how... Like, I mean, it was very... When, like, the siblings come and see the little girl's picture
yeah, all the
and their reaction is very sad. It's very mm-hmm. like that scene was super tough,
but it's also very theatrical.
It is theatrical, yeah, mm-hmm. but like the way that in which it happens, it's like you have to have this like this very private moment very publicly, like
there are photographers there too,
yes,
which is so
that they were able to like that quickly get up like to know who had been and like to put their photos mm-hmm. up and stuff. And to make that very private thing very public is exploitive in a way. But it also, like, it just seemed very familiar. I feel like when I was watching that, like, it was difficult to watch because it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
But it was also very familiar because, like, how many times have we seen, like a school shooting or, like, you know, something happen where it's like, oh, they've set up this memorial, but, like, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Another element that I liked is sort of the sense of like everyday life being interrupted. So people spending time outside by the river and then the monster attacks.
Yeah.
That whole scene. There's also the family dinner scene where different members of the family, they're sort of like after they've escaped the hospital, they go back to their food truck.
Yeah.
And they're having dinner and each different members of the family see Hyun-soo with them. She kind of just like pops up in between the sister and her dad, and they're all just sort of like sharing food with her, and you get the like you get the sense that she was just kind of like everybody's child.
That killed me.
Yeah.
That scene I felt was like I feel like that scene was maybe the most like effective scene in the whole movie because it just was like they all like they seem like kind of a family that doesn't like they seem like a regular family and that they're not like super tight.
Mm-hmm.
And that they all have their own things going on and their mm-hmm. own issues. And, like, one of them is, like, a great archer. The other one is, like, you know, gone to school and can't get a job and mm-hmm. is dealing with that. And the other one is, like, manning a food stall with mm-hmm. his dad and daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're all just kind of doing their own thing. But, like, it's just, like, the sense of family that is around that table. And it just, like, the sense, like, how important, like, food is in making community and in interesting family. And then how she just sort of is there and they're all just sort of feeding her. Like,
that was so sweet.
Such a heartbreaking scene.
Yeah. And I also get the sense that Hyun-soo is sort of the one that connects them all.
Yeah, totally.
And then that's also mirrored in the end when the dad adopts that small child who survived.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And like that they like, that is like, she is the sort of common thread between mm-hmm. all of them that like it's her disappearance that sort of unites them all and brings them all
mm-hmm.
because they each try their own things and then throughout, like they're all kind of like kills like get smashed into like a wall at mm-hmm. different parts and are unconscious for certain amounts of time and then come back and work together.
I did like how they each got to like show off their skills at the end.
Yeah, I think that too.
The sister was able to use her archery. The brother was able to use his Molotov cocktail.
And
I just thought even the grandfather's death was very much in line with his character, like very selfless, like just putting his family first. And
I thought that that scene was was very effective in mm-hmm. showing how she was the glue for all of them.
Definitely such a good movie. Thanks so much for suggesting it.
Thanks for being into watching it.
I
forgot about it. Mm-hmm. It was one of those ones that I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
This one. Let's watch that.
Yeah. Maybe I'll try more monster movies. I won't be such a snob about them.
You should.
Yeah.
Just see how it goes. It's just a movie. You don't have to, like, you know, marry it.
Yeah.
I remember when I watched this movie the first time, I remember being like, oh, this is smart. Like, this talks about things without talking about them. And, like, there's a lot of layers to this. And I really, I thought it was funny and sad and, like, self-deprecating in ways that, like, I really appreciate when I watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that there was this, like, weird creature that, like, I was never sure. I was like, does it have, like, 8 mouths? Yeah. It's got flaps.
You know what it's, like, you know when it's, like, watering itself?
Yeah.
Have you seen The Faculty?
Yes.
You know when those aliens, like, they open up their mouths? Or, like, they, like... all their little tendrils come out of their face in the rain.
Yeah.
That's what that reminded me of.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because I was trying to think about, like, when I see, like, a creature like this, I'm, like, trying to think about other sorts of creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's sometimes, after a while, they kind of all have a similar-esque look to them.
Yeah, or you can see, like, what sort of animal elements they bring into it.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for this one, because it was, like, it's aquatic and it's, like, fish.
Yeah.
There was that part to it, but it also was just, like, so weird.
Yeah.
Like, I just was like, this is cool because, like, I don't know what this is.
Because it makes no sense.
Yeah, because it has, like, a long tail and, like, two big legs and a bunch of, like, other, like, fish fins sticking out at random parts.
Yeah.
And it has, like a parrotfish, like, beak mouth.
And teeth.
But then there's, like, yeah, like, in that, yeah, like, teeth with, like, the weird beak part. But then there's, like, the flaps around it that, like, also have teeth. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just appreciate whoever came up with what this thing looks like and the fact that they called it Steve Buscemi.
Yeah, love that.
Which I love.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to Bikini Drive-In. And thank you, Sarah, for being on the show again.
Thanks for having me.
You can listen to Bikini Drive-In on CKW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg every Sunday at 4:30. You could also listen to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks.
Bye. Bye. We'll be right back. You're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Our frequency celebrates diversity.